"Since you're so well-educated," says I, pulling her down beside me, "let's see how much you remember." And I put her through a most searching test, which, being Elspeth, she interrupted from time to time with her serious observations on Mrs. Morrison's chances of marrying off the two chits. "Well," says I, when we were exhausted, "so long as I ain't expected to help launch them in society, I don't mind. Good luck to it, I say, and I hope they get a duke apiece." But, of course, I had to be dragged into it. Elspeth was quite determined to use my celebrity for what it was still worth, on her sister's behalf. And I knew that when she was insistent, there was no way of resisting her. She controlled the purse strings, you see, and the cash I'd brought home wouldn't last long at my rate of spending, I knew. So, it was a fairly bleak prospect I'd come back to. The governor away in the grip of the quacks and demon drink. Old Morrison in the house, carping and snuffling. Elspeth and Mrs. Morrison planning their campaign to inflict her sisters on unsuspecting London. And myself likely to be roped in. Which meant being exposed in public alongside my charming Scotch relations. I should have to take old Morrison to my club and stand behind Mrs. Morrison's chair at parties, no doubt listening to her teaching some refined mama the recipe for haggis, and have people saying, "Seen Flash's in-laws, they eat peat, don't you know, and speak nothing but Gaelic." Well, it wasn't English, surely. Oh, I knew what to expect, and determined to keep out of it. I thought of going to see my Uncle Bindley at the Horse Guards and beseeching him to arrange an appointment for me to some regiment out of town. I was off the active list just then, and was not relishing the idea of half pay anyway. And while I was hesitating in those first few days at home, the letter came that helped to solve my difficulties for me, and incidentally changed the map of Europe. It came like the answer to a pagan's prayer, along with a dun for some tailor or other, an anti-popish tract, a demand for my club subscription, and an invitation to buy railway shares, all the usual trash. Why I should remember the others, I don't know. I must have a perverse memory, for the contents of the big white envelope should have been enough to drive them out of my head. It was a fine, imposing cover, best quality paper with a coat of arms on the back, which I have before me now. There was a shield, quartered red, blue, blue and white, and in the quarters were a sword, a crowned lion, what looked like a fat whale, and a pink rose. Plainly it was either from someone of tremendous rank or the manufacturers of a new brand of treacle. Inside there was a letter, and stamped at the top in flowery letters, surrounded by foliage full of pink-bottomed cupids, were the words, "Gräfin de Lansfeld." And who the deuce, I wondered, might she be, and what does she want with me? The letter I reproduce exactly as it now lies in my hand, very worn and creased after 60 years, but still perfectly legible. It is, I think, quite the most remarkable communication I've ever received, even including the letter of thanks I got from Jefferson Davis and the reprieve I was given in Mexico. It said, "Most honoured sir, I write to you on instruction of Her Grace, the Countess de Lansfeld, of whom you had the honour to be acquainted in Londres some years ago. Her Grace commands me to inform you that she holds the warmest recollections of your friendship and wishes to convey her strongest greetings on this occasion.